This is joint work with Chuan Qing from University of South Carolina. Actually, he recently joined Microsoft as well. Karin Strauss and Dimitrios Limberopoulos, both from Microsoft Research. So I'm going to start this talk with a very simple scenario, which may be familiar to some of you, or you may be in this situation even this evening. So Joe is attending a security conference in Bellevue, and later in the evening, he decides to head back home by taking a bus. So just before leaving the conference venue, he checks on his mobile phone through this bus application where the bus is and what is the estimated arrival time, and then he starts walking towards the bus stop. On his way there, he receives a Facebook notification from a friend, and there is a link. He clicks on the link and then closes his phone and keeps walking. He checks one more time his map application just to ensure he's heading towards the right bus stop, and keeps walking and finally reaches the destination. At the bus stop, he meets a friend from the same conference, starts chatting with his friend, and then he checks another couple of times whether the bus is arriving, what's the estimated arrival time. So this is about half mile walk, 10 minutes, and Joe interacted with his mobile phone several times, a total of 6 application invocations. Now, he's attending a security conference. He has a PIN configured on his mobile phone with a short timeout. In order to access these applications, he has to enter a PIN 5 times, which is about a PIN every 2 minutes. Where has the phone been during this time? Most of the time it was in his hands, on his pocket. And could the phone recognize his presence? Well, with a front-facing camera, while he was reading text on the phone or he was typing something, the camera could have recognized his presence, as well as while he was chatting with his friend at the bus stop, speaker recognition could have recognized his voice. And finally, but very importantly, notice that out of these 6 invocations, there is perhaps just one that really had some sensitive information and requires some security, the case of the Facebook application. So given that this is the state of the art today with our mobile phones, it's not surprising when we read in the news that users enjoy to have mobile banking and similar features on their mobile phones, but 60% or more of them do not actually use a PIN on their phone. In addition to that, the access control model, which is the state of the art on our mobile phones, it's an all or nothing model where users can either configure a PIN and so had to enter this PIN every time they want to access an application, perhaps with some hard-coded exceptions. For example, on a Windows phone, you can do emergency calls and you can take photos without authenticating. Or they simply do not configure a PIN, and so they can access all their applications without authentication. Before doing this work, we actually ran a preliminary user study specifically on this topic. And if you're interested, I invite you to check this publication. But one of the major findings was that regardless of whether users today have a PIN or do not have a PIN on their phone, they are equally disappointed. And they would like to have roughly half of their applications protected by some security lock and half to be always available unprotected. So motivated by this problem, in this talk I'm going to present progressive authentication. And as a warning before I start diving into the details of the model, this is not about a new authentication mechanism for mobile phones, but it's more about proposing an approach to decide when to surface authentication to mobile users and for which applications this is necessary. So one of the major goals of progressive authentication is to go beyond the all or nothing model of today's phones. Progressive authentication allows users to configure different protection levels for different applications. Based on our study, we found that 3 security levels was a good compromise for most users. And so this is what I'm going to assume for the rest of the talk, and it's also what our system enables by default. So users can create these security bins, which have increasing security thresholds associated. And you can imagine a user placing in the public bin with the lowest security something like games or a weather application, In a private bin, they could put something like phone application, messaging, email, pictures. And finally, in the most secure bin, the confidential one, they could put something like banking applications. So once users have configured their device and made this association, now the system has to reason about these three security levels. And so over time, the system has to decide whether a user, depending on which application wants to access, can be automatically authenticated into the system or instead is required to enter explicit credentials, so typing a PIN or a password. And the system does this by maintaining and computing constantly over time what we call a user authenticity level. So if this level is below the security threshold associated to the application the user is trying to access, the user will be required to enter his credentials, enter a PIN. While in the opposite case, in which the authenticity level is higher than the security threshold associated to the application, it will automatically be authenticated. So for example, if here the user invokes a private application, it will be granted access automatically. But if he tries to invoke a confidential application with a higher security threshold, the access will be denied and it will be prompt to enter his credential. And this credential could be a PIN, password, face recognition, anything that the phone is using for authentication. Now, this is nice, but how do we actually compute this authenticity level in a reliable manner? So progressive authentication builds on the increasing availability of sensors in our mobile phones today. So phones come equipped with gyroscope, accelerometers, compass, speaker, audio, front-facing camera, temperature, light sensors. And not only we have more and more sensors available, but it's also becoming easier to program these sensors in a reliable manner. And even more importantly, there are several proposals for low-power continuous sensing architecture, which makes feasible and practical to have these sensors integrated in real applications. Then the question is, which sensor to use? I could use my front-facing camera on the phone and do some simple face recognition. The problem is that when you rely only on one of these type of sensor, the process may be very unreliable. That sensor may not be available all the time, and so this may not work very well. So instead, in progressive authentication, we combine a number of these signals, so it's a multimodal approach. And not only signals that comes from the mobile phone, but also from the surrounding environment and other devices that the user owns, like my desktop PC in the office or my own PC. So to give you some examples, progressive authentication computes identity signals using face and voice recognition based on camera and audio sensors. It computes continuity signals. These signals basically indicate whether the phone has been with the user, in contact with the user, in his hands, in his pocket, or the user has actually left the phone unattended, for example, place it on a table. And in order to detect this, you can use accelerometers, touchscreen events, light, humidity, temperature sensors. It uses proximity, particular proximity to known devices that the user owns. Imagine the case in which the user comes in the morning to his office, starts doing something on his PC, authenticates into the PC, and is active, is doing something, and then grabs his phone to send an SMS. Well, the phone can leverage the information that the user just authenticated with a device which is known and it's nearby for authentication. Secrets are still part of this proposal, so PIN passwords are treated as other signals. In particular, these are very strong and hard-to-face signals that can be leveraged as well to establish the identity of the user. And in this model, you can start plugging in any signal you want, behavioral, possession, location-based. You can build routine, understand which places the user is likely to go at what time, which people is likely to phone, and based on this, vary the confidence in his authenticity. So in order to combine all these signals. Since they are very noisy, unreliable, not synchronized, some of them are harder to fake than others, we rely on machine learning techniques. So the entire flow looks like this. From sensors, measurements are collected, and they are processed by a low-level processing engine that will extract some basic signals, like you can do face recognition, voice recognition, detection of where the phone is being placed, and so forth. Then these signals are translated into features, and the features are combined in a so-called feature vector, which is then given as input to the machine learning model. The machine learning model will associate to this vector a label that indicates what is the confidence of the system in the user authenticity. Since we are talking about a three-level system, this label can be of three different types: public, private, or confidential. And based on that, then authentication is decided. So let's look at one example. Let's imagine accelerometers on your phone. Accelerometer samples are collected every 10 milliseconds. They are fed into a processing engine, which is simply a decision tree, that will output a label, like for example, table. The phone has been placed on the table. And from these, a number of features are extracted, like what's the current placement, what's the duration, what's the last time I saw the phone in the user hands, and so forth. And these are then used for invoking the machine learning model. Now, what is hard in all this process is actually deciding which features to use and how to train this machine learning model. Ideally, you would like to do all this training offline, even before the phone ships to the user. In order to do that, what we consider to do is to have a population of users with their devices, collect sensors from their devices, extract signals, and extract feature vectors that can then be used to train the machine learning model offline. Notice that these feature vectors are now labeled feature vectors, so they have associated a ground truth label. So for example, imagine a situation where the user is speaking, his voice is around, his face is in front of the camera, the phone is in the user's hands, is far from any PC that is known to the system. So all these signals are collected and translated into a number of features. And this combination has a ground truth label associated, which could be the user is private, in a private state. So by giving these label feature vectors, the machine learning model can be trained to associate to different combinations of features the correct label. So this is how the training is done. Now, most of the models are user agnostic, so they can be trained offline before the user actually gets the phone. But there are also some personalized models that this system relies on. For example, in our case, voice and face recognition, that needs to be trained once the user actually has his phone. So we choose to have personalized models which are simple to train, and they can be trained in the background while users is doing other tasks. You can imagine training your face recognition while you are reading emails on the phone, or training voice while you're having a phone call. Once this personalized training is done, these models are fed into the general model and the user can start using the system. So we implemented this on Windows phones. We also experimented with extra sensors that were attached to the phone, like temperature, humidity, that weren't available on the phone platform. In order to build the machine learning model, we ran a small user study where we had 9 users interacting with the system for about an hour and a half. And the user was given a script with several tasks, which emulated several office scenarios. So for example, the user was asked to interact with a PC, edit a presentation, then he was interrupted by an incoming phone call, so he had to grab his phone. Then he was going back to his PC, check the calendar on the phone, run to a meeting, forget his phone in the office, come back, and so forth. So in this script, he interacted with five different applications, and a phone and a PC were involved. Then we inserted several attacks during this task. And attackers were both strangers and people known to the user, like friends and colleagues. Attackers may know which signals the system was using for authentication or may not know. So there were attackers that would enter the office of the user and stay out of the range of the camera mounted on his PC and kept being silent, not to give any cues to the system about their non-authentication. And others instead of didn't know, and so they would speak and so be very quickly deauthenticated. We didn't consider attacks to passwords and biometrics, since these are out of scope and they are orthogonal to the system. And also we assumed the OS on the phone and the PC to be trusted, as well as the wireless link. Finally, when the user was present, we assumed that the user could implicitly authorize other users to use the system, use his phone, through, for example, by just simply handling the phone. So progressive authentication did not try to protect in these cases. We tested and trained three different machine learning models: support vector machine, which is the default in our system, decision tree, and linear regression. In our evaluation, we had four main goals: evaluate the reduction in the authentication overhead provided by progressive authentication, evaluate the trade-offs between convenience and security, given a quantification of how well machine learning techniques can estimate the user authenticity, and finally quantify the power consumption overhead. So I won't talk today about the accuracy of the machine learning models. I invite you to check our paper for these details. So authentication overhead. Well, a primary goal of progressive authentication is to reduce the authentication overhead on mobile phones, such that this can be an attractive solution for users who today do not use a PIN on their phones. So in the script that we've given to our users, they went through several tasks and they invoked different applications. So we basically counted how many times on average across all the users a user was required to enter a PIN for carrying out this task with progressive authentication and with two state-of-the-art phones. So one with a PIN with a 1 minute timeout and one without PIN. So in the case of a phone with a PIN, on average, they had to enter the PIN 19 times. With progressive authentication, the number was reduced to 11, so about a 40% reduction. From a security standpoint, based on the attack scenarios we consider, progressive authentication wasn't less secure than a system that had a PIN enabled. So we think that this can be an attractive trade-off for users who today do receive zero security and they are willing to pay a smaller overhead than what today's system offers. On the other hand, a question is a 40% reduction in the authentication overhead sufficient to convince these users to use such a system? Well, if it's not, users can go and configure directly what's the trade-off between authentication overhead, so convenience, and security of their systems. How does it happen? Well, first of all, let me introduce two definitions. We define false rejections as cases in which the system incorrectly require a legitimate user to enter a PIN for accessing his application. So the user should be automatically authenticated, but the system makes a mistake and requires credentials. And we define false authentications as cases in which the system incorrectly authenticates a non-legitimate user. So this is a potential attack to the system. Now, users can configure what we call a risk factor that basically will decide which machine learning model is loaded into the phone OS. And this is similar to configuring a hard or a weak password today. So with a high risk factor, the system is optimized for convenience. So the users will be very rarely required to enter a PIN in this system. But this brings the risk of potential false authentications. As the opposite, if the user configures a low risk factor, the system will be optimized to provide security, but the users may be required to enter a PIN a few times, so there may be more false rejections. So we evaluated for different risk factors what was the percentage of false rejections and false authentications for accessing private or confidential applications. As you can see in this table, with an increasing risk factor, the number of false rejections for private applications decreased. So the system is optimized for convenience. But on the other hand, if you look at the false authentications, the number increases, so the system becomes less secure. If you look at what happens for confidential applications, you see that this trend is still true, but it's actually, the system is much more conservative. This is not a bug, but it's actually a feature in the sense that since confidential applications need to be protected more strongly, by default, the system penalizes more strongly errors in making false authentications for confidential applications. So it's very hard for the system to let non-legitimate users access confidential applications, but on the other hand, the user is also required more often to enter a PIN, his credentials to access these confidential applications. So overall, these results show that progressive authentication is potentially attractive for users who today do not use any PIN on their mobile phones, and not only reduces the authentication overhead, but let them also configure what is the trade-off between overhead and security. So the last aspect I'm going to briefly touch is power consumption. So we rely on low energy continuous sensing architectures such as Little Rock, which is also an MSR prototype. And then you can utilize different techniques to trade the power consumption. So for example, you can disable, enable costly signals or offload computation to the cloud. We analyzed how different configurations where we utilize these techniques to see what was the power consumed by the system and the corresponding execution time. So in the first configuration, the entire system was running on the phone. Light and heavy computation tasks were on the phone, and the average power consumption was about 650 milliwatt for an execution time of about 200 milliseconds. Consider that our baseline case is that of a phone with wireless on and with display on, and the power drain in that case is about, for this type of phone, 900 milliwatt. Then a second configuration we considered was the case in which we disabled some expensive tasks, particularly Bluetooth-based detection, proximity detection, and voice identification. So in this case, you can see a drop in the power drain for a similar execution time. But the problem with this configuration is that also the accuracy of the model is going to be decreased. So more potential attacks for the system. Instead, another approach would be to offload this task to the cloud. In this case, the power consumption is reduced, the execution time increases, and this is because there is now an extra cost, which is due to the communication overhead of transferring raw sensor measurements to the cloud. And finally, an extreme configuration that we considered was to run the entire system on the cloud and simply use the mobile phone as a sensor. So just upload raw measurements to the cloud and do all the processing there. So the power drain in this case is not due to computation, but it's simply the communication overhead. And you can see also the latency becomes higher. So what's the best configuration? Probably local remote offers the best trade-off here, but the best thing to do is actually to be able to switch from one configuration to the other based on what is the state of the phone. What's the battery level? Is the phone at home, in an office, or in a public environment? What is the user doing with his phone? And so trade this overhead. So summarizing, I have presented progressive authentication. It provides smaller and configurable overhead, and also provide multi-level protections for users' applications. We consider these an attractive solutions for users who today do not use any security lock on their mobile phones. This was prototyped for mobile phones, but its model is actually extensible to tablets and desktop PCs. And we show how with a few unreliable signals, we were able to achieve a reasonable accuracy and with an optimized implementation have some reasonable performance. So thank you all for your attention. And if you're interested, come to see me for a demo. Thank you.
So we have a couple of minutes for questions. Name and affiliation, please.
Thank you. Yazan Boshmav, UBC. I noticed that you're using supervised machine learning to train the classifiers. Given that the mobile owner's behavior changes over time, do you have any estimate when these classifiers need to be retrained, other than changing the convenience factor?
Yes. So with support vector machine, yes, I think this is something that would come to your phone as an update. As today you download updates on your phone. The idea is that while users are interacting with the system offline, the phone manufacturer can actually in parallel test these models. And anytime potential attacks or improvements can be added, you would ship a new model. And you just simply install this on your phone. It's a simple decision tree, so it's a very small piece of code that you need to download.
So you expect a single trained model to work for everyone, or do you make it subjective for every user?
So there are parts of the model that are user agnostic, and those are those you can update offline and can be maintained, can be given to the user before you ship the phone. And then there are some personalized models, but this should be a very small number, because you don't want to put an overhead on the user. So face and voice recognition can be trained all the time. You can do this once a month in the background while the user is without the user noticing it.
Logan Gabriel, IBM. So my question comment is, most people who are privacy concerned don't want their voice patterns and face recognition patterns uploaded to a cloud.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the underlying privacy model to consider? People don't want to carry wiretaps around with them.
Sure, that's a big concern. Well, I mean, this model doesn't force you to use a cloud, right? You can decide to use the cloud for a power trade-off, but this is not necessarily the configuration that you would choose. You can also decide not to use these signals. I mean, the advantage of this kind of model is that you can plug in any signal that is available in the system. So a user that may be concerned about this and may have his only solution using the cloud could simply disable this. Or you can think of doing some encryption, or maybe just use your PC for offloading computation so that you don't have these privacy concerns.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I like the overall model.
Thank you.
Hi, Ildar Muslukov, University of British Columbia. I have small clarification question. So basically, in the set of factors which are using for the model, PIN code or whichever authentication method they prefer is the strongest one. Is it correct? So once they type a PIN, the confidence levels go to the up?
Yes. So the PIN is as any other signal and a cue about the identity of the user. Yes. Okay. So it's treated like any other credential.
We don't have time, I understand, right?
Sorry?
We don't have time?
We are out of time, yes.
Okay, I will take the rest question offline.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
So next up...